Right. Hi, everyone. My name is Dylan Rainey. I'm the program manager for the VINA Groundwater Sustainability Agency, or the VINA GSA. The VINA GSA was established as part of California's Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, or SGMA, which requires that high and medium priority basins form local agencies to manage groundwater sustainability, sustainably. VINA GSA was established as a high priority basin, sub-basin. Our goal here is to ensure that groundwater in the VINA sub-basin can meet the needs of our communities, agriculture, and environment now and into the future. Together with our partners, we've developed a groundwater sustainability plan, a GSP, that we're implementing through a series of projects and initiatives. Today's meeting is part of our ongoing effort to inform and engage the public in these important efforts. With that, I would like to hand it over to Toby Zintaner from Agricultural Groundwater Users of Butte County and the project manager for the Demand Reduction Strategies Project.
Okay, thank you, Dylan. I appreciate that. My name is Toby Giesentanner, and as Dylan mentioned, I am essentially a project manager for the Agricultural Groundwater Users of Butte County. And we partnered with the VINA GSA back in April of this year to help coordinate the demand reduction strategy component of this VINA GSA grant. So I'm going to just jump right into it. There's two other folks that I'm going to introduce in just a minute, but I'm going to give a quick overview of what we're looking at here. So the VINA GSA was awarded a $5.5 million grant from DWR, and you can see in the table on the right, there's a list of kind of areas and some key activities, and then budget amounts that were granted to the VINA GSA to implement over basically a 2-year period. The funds have to be spent by March 2026, and that obviously has us on a very tight time frame. That turned into the VINA GSA at the time didn't have any staff. I don't believe you had any staff. Dylan, were you there yet? I don't think you were there. But so they didn't have any staff, and so they're looking for partners to help implement the grant. And so the VINA GSA decided to partner with the Department of Water and Resource Conservation at the county level, which is Cammie, and I think she's on the phone today. And then they also partnered with the Agricultural Groundwater Users of Butte County to implement the demand reduction strategy. So it's this area right in the middle there. It's about $2.4 million. And there's a couple of programs underneath this particular component of the grant. And before I go any further, part of the VINA GSA working with AGBC was also we brought in another consultant group called Land IQ, who is really the brains behind the effort. And I'll let on the call today are two folks from that organization, Joel Kimmelshue, who's well known around the state, and then Stephanie Tillman, who's assigned to our project, but she's worked in this area for years, probably 7 or 8 years now on various issues. But Land IQ is a spatial satellite company that analyzes data, and I'll let Joel talk a little bit more about what that company does. But they're the brains behind the two programs: this Extend Orchard Replacement Pilot Program and the Precision Irrigation Pilot Program. So the demand reduction strategy funded these two pilot programs. The Extend Orchard Replacement Program is essentially a rotational fallowing program. When we think about essentially the Sacramento Valley versus the Central Valley, down in the Central Valley, you have the problem down there with groundwater is much worse. And so you have permanent fallowing occurring essentially south of Sacramento. North of Sacramento, the problem is not as bad. And so we've zeroed in on essentially a temporary or rotational fallowing concept. And this is a concept that was that was brought to the attention of the Vina GSA back in, I think it's 2020, by some farmers in the area. This type of program has been implemented as a permanent fallowing program in other parts of the state, but they brought it to the attention of the Vina GSA and said, look, let's try to get some funds to see if this type of temporary or rotational fallowing program will work up here. So that found its way into the groundwater sustainability plan that the GSA approved and sent off to the state, and the state also approved. And it's the basis for one of the two demand reduction strategies that's included in our GSP, and it got grant funded, or it's getting some grant funds to implement it. So basically, the idea is that the program would incentivize local growers to extend the duration of a fallowing of their current fallowing practice between orchard removal and replanting by one or more growing seasons. So what does that mean? So an orchard has a natural life. Let's say it's 25 to 30 years. And when that orchard comes out, the common practice is, in most cases, now it's not black and white here, but in most cases is to go as quickly back into production as possible. And so the idea here is that you would take an orchard out and you would leave it out for that season and an additional season or 2 seasons. And in exchange for that, the grower would receive some form of incentive. But there is benefits obviously for the grower, but then there's also benefits for the groundwater basin. And in this area on the image to the left, what you're looking at is really kind of a rotational idea where every 2, 3, 4 years, different acreage is coming out of production. And so the idea here is if we could develop, I mean, this is the pilot of what we hope will be a much longer term program here, where acreage is coming out and staying out for an additional year or 2 years. And then that lends it's that 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 leads to a reduction in overall demand of groundwater. So the program that we have put in the GSP that's being funded, the goal is to temporarily fallow between 1,600 and 3,200 acres per year. Well, if that happens, we'll see a reduction of groundwater use by 4,000 to 8,000 acre feet per year in the sub-basin, which is an important target for us. The program elements, and I won't spend too much time here. If you look to the right, there's a website. There are grant guidelines that are currently on a website that you can go to, download the grant guidelines to review the program. We're in the middle of a 30-day public comment period. I believe that comment period closes. I can't remember. No. Well, let me see here. It will close on November 25th. So we're looking for public comment on those grant guidelines, and you can either access it through the website, or if you have a phone and you pull out your camera and you look at that scan me section, and then it'll and then hit the link, it'll take you to the website where those grant guidelines are. But the program elements of this Extend Orchard Replacement Program are, there's obviously incentive components, there's some eligibility exclusions and minimum requirements. There's an application process. There's a review process. I don't think I'm going to spend, I'll come back to this if there are questions on this, but those are the basic elements of the program. The basic timeline is, as you can see, this is where we're at November 7th. This will be up on the website so people can refer back to it. There may be some discussion at the SHAC meeting on the 20th. We did a presentation last week in front of the shack as well. On November 25th, the guidelines that public comment period closes, which I talked about. And then we're hoping that by December 11th, the Vina GSA will be able to approve the grant guidelines for the Extend Orchard Replacement Program. That'll kick off an application period where growers will apply for grant funds. There's going to be a workshop on the 17th or 18th, the beginning of that application period. On January 10th, that application period would close. There's going to be a review process, and then applicants will be selected, contracts would be completed, and then trees would be removed no later than March or April of 2025. All right, so that's the 30,000 foot of the Extend Orchard from a programmatic level. For precision irrigation, this is the second of two primary demand reduction strategy programs for the Vina Subbasin. And the idea here is to perform a comprehensive state of irrigation technology and systems analysis in the subbasin. And there's four steps, and I won't spend a ton of time because I don't want to step on what Jill is going to talk about. But basically, in step one, we're trying to figure out which orchards in the subbasin use more or less water. Then we're trying to in step two, we're trying to understand why, and then come up with our short list, essentially. And then we're going to work with willing landowners on a voluntary basis to collect some additional information on those fields, with the goal in step four of identifying additional strategies to reduce, it's called non-beneficial ET, so evapotranspiration. So it's the water that's not going to the plant that's being used. Figure out a way to reduce that non-beneficial ET without decreasing yield. And the idea here is we're going to do a pilot with the idea of developing a program that we can roll out at the end of this. So that's the 30,000 foot. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to shift over to Joel it looks like Joel and Stephanie. And I'm going to let them talk a little bit more about the science and how it's all coming together. So let me stop sharing. And then Stephanie, I think you're up to share here. And I'm just going to go on mute. And then Stephanie or Joel, I'm going to let you guys take over.
Thanks, Toby. I'll start off. And Steph, do you want me to share first, or you want to share? I think you're on mute, but.
Yeah, sorry. I can share. I can drive if you want. You can just tell me.
That'd be great. Well, thanks, Toby. Toby gave a good introduction to the work that we're doing. I want to give credit to Jeff Davids and his team that did a lot of upfront kind of planning on this and thoughts and working through the demand strategies that are specific to and important for the Vina subbasin. We're going to talk about two of those that Toby already introduced, and that's extend orchard replacement and precision irrigation. I'm going to talk about the extend orchard replacement, and then Stephanie will talk about precision irrigation. But the reason I talk about that is because they're applicable to the Vina subbasin, especially extend orchard replacement, because the vast majority of irrigated ground in the Vina subbasin is tree crops, whether that be walnuts, almonds, prunes a little bit. And I don't know. You want me to share it? Maybe I'm missing it. Have you shared it, Stephanie?
Yeah, I did. Okay, there, I'll do it again.
There you go.
Do you see now?
Yeah, I can see it now. And yeah, I think that's full screen. Yeah, you're good. Okay. So outline for today is pretty simple. Talk about the GSP implementation. And part of that is the demand reduction strategies and the overview and the data sources that we're using and will continue to use. Those data sources will be applied to two main programs. That's the Extend Orchard Replacement Program, which I'll be introducing, and then Stephanie will carry on with the Precision Irrigation Pilot Program. Both very applicable to the crops and agricultural and agronomic production systems in the Vina subbasin. So the first one is, let's talk about those programs. Next slide. So we had part of the GSP implementation is, part of that is demand reduction strategies. And again, the first one we're going to talk about and Toby introduced, Extend Orchard Replacement Pilot Program, and then Precision Irrigation. I do want to make a point. Toby introduced it, and he's correct. I always like to, we do a lot of work in the South Valley and Kings, Kern, Tulare counties, a little bit in Fresno. And to put things in perspective, and Toby introduced that appropriately so, we're talking about overcoming a deficit of, around 20,000 acre feet a year. And we're These programs, these demand reduction strategies that we're introducing today, are intended to avoid long-term or permanent fallowing. And that is in many cases, south of Sacramento in the San Joaquin Valley, is the only way that some of those sub-basins will become sustainable. And I think that's a key differentiator between the South and where we are. Just to put it in perspective, it seems daunting, but in the big picture of what other people are looking at and having to deal with, it's not. And I'm very optimistic and excited about these programs because we can cover that deficit, I firmly believe, with these types of approaches. So the main overarching approach in this work is LandIQ. We do a bit of spatial work. So just like on that image behind me on the screen, all of those are agricultural fields, and that's the San Joaquin River, if you care about that. We map every single agricultural field in California. So we started doing that for DWR back in 2014. And then, as a fallout of that, people say, okay, now tell me what crop type it is. That's fine. So in this case, it'd be walnuts, almonds, and prunes primarily, although there's a few others in the Vina sub-basin. Then the next question is, can you tell me the age of every orchard? And that gets back to, when will these things maybe be removed? When are these orchards at the end of their lifespan? And at the age of those orchards, there's a direct correlation to how much water is consumed. Can you tell me what orchards have been removed? Can you tell me the soil types that they're on? We've already begun a project in the Vina sub-basin where we completed the ground truthing to identify an irrigation method for every block out there and where all that information is located within the sub-basin. And then also, because we do a bunch of ET work, we're implementing that program in the Vina sub-basin now and have begun to understand the consumption of not applied water, but the consumption of water per block or field. That's a big part of this. And when you have all that spatial data together, amongst others that are not listed on this slide, you can then inform yourself more objectively about where you might want to strategize, what growers you might want to work with, where things might change before other areas might change, etc. We also incorporate into the approaches of these two demand reduction strategies non-spatial data, which include literature or local expertise of that area, how growers grow their crops, how they irrigate, what types of methods do they use, and there's been a past irrigation survey that was done, and we also have ERA Economics is doing the economic piece to this. And then, of course, equally important is grower input to understand management practices for outreach and communication, which Tovey is in charge of, to ensure their participation and excitement in these programs. We want great participation. Understand their past experiences, how they've changed from the past to the present. And yield is an important part. So what we want to do is, Tovey kind of introduced it, at least in precision irrigation program, we want to reduce non-beneficial ET where we can without affecting yield. So understanding historic yield and how we're moving forward is important too. Next slide. I talked about the spatial data. We've got every orchard, every individual homogeneous crop type mapped in the Vina sub-basin. You can see the three large ones here: almonds, walnuts, and prunes. The category of young perennials is just what it says it is, newly planted orchard. And we can't necessarily tell the type of orchard until after about the second year. The canopy's got to get big enough if we don't drive by it and ground truth it. But just so we put a placeholder in there, and there's obviously a direct correlation between the consumption of water on a younger orchard, smaller tree canopy, as opposed to a larger orchard with a full canopy. Next slide. Other spatial data. This is just a figure of those spatial data, but we know every one of those blocks, the age of every one of those blocks. So what orchards might we target in the future moving forward for extend orchard replacement? We probably want to target those orchards that were planted in some of the older years that are on the left-hand side of this figure. And this is the age of each of year planted of almonds, walnuts, and prunes. Next slide. We're going to overlay those types of spatial data on tops of soils because it matters what type of soil you might be on when it comes to determining consumption and also determining non-beneficial consumption, ET. We might see a little bit greater infiltration and percolation of irrigation water on coarser textured soils than we will on finer textured soils. So is that water standing on the surface of the ground too long? Do we want to work with that grower from a precision irrigation standpoint to maybe have them irrigate lower volumes less more frequently than a larger volume less frequently? Those are types of an example of precision irrigation. So just another spatial overlay. Next slide. So I want to clarify, and I always try to do this when and put this slide in every presentation that I give when it relates to water use. So people ask, we just want to know how much water we use. The first question I an answer, ask them is, what type of use are you talking about? And there's two types of use. Applied water, which is what it sounds like, and that is water that is applied to the surface of a block or an orchard or any field. And that's usually water that's diverted from surface water or pumped from groundwater. And that is usually measured via meters or other flow measurement devices. Consumed water is the other type of water use. That is the amount of water that is actually evapotranspired or consumed, both from surface of soil and plants and through the plant after application. Those are two different numbers. They're not the same. And the amount and of water that is applied plus the precipitation that hits a field better be greater than the consumption, because otherwise you're creating water somehow. And sigma is not necessarily about the water extracted. This is kind of a personal opinion, is about the water that is consumed or the amount of water that leaves your system. So if you apply 100 acre feet of water, and it holds true that the consumption has to be less than the water that's received by a field, let's say the consumption is 90 acre feet, what happens to the remaining 10 acre feet? That 10 acre feet stays in your system. It either stays in the soil profile or percolates past the root zone to recharge groundwater, but it stays within your system. So what we focus on our spatial data and is the consumption part, the water that actually leaves the water balance. Next slide. And you can see this is kind of a mocked up graphic of the orchard crops and other blocks of fields in the vina subbasin, and there's a range of consumption. That range can be affected by, and this is just a kind of a just a not representation of anyone or any person. This is just a mock-up of different crop types, and but keep in mind that this ET that we're preparing here and showing in the future is the sum of both precipitation and irrigation. So don't think that the consumption of water in this slide is greater than 55 inches in some of these blocks, that we get 20 plus inches of rainfall in the vina subbasin, and that's a large component. So there's that part of differentiating between consumption and applied water, or precipitation and irrigation, sorry. So this is yet another spatial layer that will be used for both the Extend Orchard Replacement Program, that's for reasons that I've previously mentioned, then also for the Precision Irrigation Program is kind of the baseline. So now go ahead, the next slide. So this, I'm going to give a couple slides on Extend Orchard Replacement. It's already been introduced, but the concept is pretty simple. Let's incentivize growers when they decide to remove an orchard to leave that orchard out for an additional year, therefore not irrigate it. It's kind of like rotational fallowing, but at the same time doesn't take the land permanently out of production. And so that's the idea here. And the concept is, okay, where do we go to define where those orchards might be best candidates? set up an application program for people to apply for the incentives and work with them to understand the difference. So the difference is basically what water would have been consumed had that orchard been there, a mature orchard, versus a year when it wasn't there. And that would be the consumption off of fallow ground. So that would be only precipitation contributions. So what is that difference? And those are the water savings. And because we have everything mapped everywhere, we can track that on a block by block basis. Next slide, Steph. So the Extend Orchard Replacement Program kind of schedule of events, if you will, is we're developing now the draft pilot program guidelines and criteria. I think Toby can speak to that better than I can. It's the timing and public release, and I think he already did. And then we'll use all the spatial data that I talked about to prioritize sub-basin areas and work with growers. And just because you have a higher consumption doesn't mean that you're not saving water or that there's a whole myriad of variables that go into that. There will be an application process. We'll work with the growers that remove their existing orchards and leave them out an extra year or two. And then our job is to quantify those water savings using ET data and the other spatial layers that I introduced already. I think that's it for me, Steph, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, before we go on to the next pilot program, are there any questions for Joel? Or we can wait till the very end too. Okay, if not, I'll just go on and describe this precision irrigation pilot program. This is the second of the demand reduction strategies. And the rationale with this pilot study is to identify orchards, and we're focusing on walnut and almond because they're so important in the Vina subbasin. We want to identify orchards that have a high potential for non-beneficial consumptive use. And then we want to develop irrigation strategies to reduce that non-beneficial consumptive use. So, what is non-beneficial consumptive use? Joel already explained that consumptive use is the water that is actually used, that is evapotranspired from plants and soil in the orchard. The rest of it that doesn't get used stays in the soil or groundwater system. Non-beneficial ET is water that is either used by weeds, because that's not benefiting the crop, or it's evaporated from, irrigation or standing water. So those are what we mean by non-beneficial ET. So in traditional agricultural studies, you would go out to a field. If you did a field study, you'd go find a field you're interested in, and you'd do a field study or a plot study, and you would apply some kind of experiment. And then you would measure the results of that. So for example, you might say, if we irrigate in this particular way, what is the resulting water use and the yield of the crop? We're taking a bit of a different approach because we have all that spatial data for the whole subbasin that Joel just showed you. So instead, we are looking at consumptive use throughout the subbasin on a field-by-field level, as you just saw on that map, and then figuring out what yields, field conditions, and management practices are associated with that consumptive use. So then we'll try to find patterns in that and in irrigation strategies and recommend new ones that result in reducing non-beneficial consumptive use while maintaining yields. So this next figure I'm going to show you here, this is courtesy of Jeff Davis, I think, who's on the call today. And I'm not going to go into what exactly all the little numbers mean and all these little arrows, but the main purpose here is that when you increase irrigation efficiency, you don't necessarily benefit the sustainability of a groundwater subbasin. And here's why. There's two main reasons. When you become more efficient in your irrigation application efficiency, there is actually less water that's recharging the groundwater system. Number two, when you become better at irrigating and more efficient, the plants like that. And so they might end up actually consuming more water. So this project, this pilot, is not about improving irrigation efficiency. It is specifically about reducing, finding non-beneficial ET and finding out ways to reduce it. So the way we're going to do that is, as Joel showed you, we know all the crops in the Vina Subbasin and where we are, where they are. And we're focusing on almonds and walnuts in mature production, so between a certain age. And we're for this particular pilot, we're not focusing on other tree crops or young and very old orchards. When we select or filter out those almonds and walnuts in mature production, then we're going to divide those using our ET data into low potential to reduce non-beneficial ET and high potential to reduce non-beneficial ET orchards. And we're going to do that with a few different criteria. And I'll explain a little bit about this more in the next few slides. And then at the end of the day, we want to identify, implement, and monitor those strategies to reduce non-beneficial ET so that we can see if there are actual water savings. And if so, if we can quantify them to see how much. So we have spatial data for all the data types that Joel was showing you there earlier in the presentation. That includes crop type, crop age, ET, some other parameters that we measure using remote sensing, and soil type. And so this means we know each of these parameters for each orchard. So there's a lot of data, right? There's a lot of numbers and a lot of spreadsheets. So, but the important thing to know here is that each of these numbers is associated with a specific orchard. So when we analyze this data, we overlay it in maps so we know the values of several parameters for each orchard. So for example, we know where orchards are that have a certain crop type, that are a certain crop age, and we know what the consumptive use is on that orchard for the last 6 years. We're using 6 years of historical data. And we also know the soil type for that orchard. So from there, we can select specific orchards that meet the criteria we are looking for. So we are interested in orchards that have high potential for non-beneficial ET so that we can figure out how to reduce the non-beneficial consumptive use without reducing yield on those orchards. But there are more of these than we can reasonably address in a pilot study. So we are we're doing this right now. We're developing criteria to select pilot orchards that will hopefully result in being very representative of the subbasin and will provide the most information to carry forward to that long-term subbasin-wide program. We'll try to develop strategies for pilot orchards to reduce that non-beneficial ET. And then the idea is to help growers implement those in 2025. We already have ET stations out there in fields in the Vina Subbasin. So we'll continue to monitor ET throughout the 2025 growing season. And then we'll be able to compare that consumptive use with our historical consumptive use numbers. So I'm just going to show you a couple of maps that illustrate how we do this. So what you're looking at right now is a map that shows all the walnuts and all the almonds in the Vina Subbasin, regardless of age. So these are old, young, everything in between, all the walnuts and almonds. In this next map, the brown polygons that are filled in are walnuts in that mature producing age that we're interested in, that are 9 to 25 years old. Anything that has brown hashing on it, they're still walnuts, but they're either younger than 9 years old or older than 25 years old. Same with almonds. When you see the green polygons, they are almonds that are between that 7 and 20 year old age, and the other almonds that are outside of that age range are in the green hashed areas. So you can see already, if we start with a large sort of data set of all the orchards, we cull that down quite a bit when we choose those orchards that are in that age range. This next map shows an example of how we merge this data together. So this shows soil type. So all the kind of pinkish or yellow or blue areas that you see are soil types. These are very broad or general soil types. And then in this case, we have the green and brown showing almonds and walnuts overlaid over top. Now, this, as I said, is a very general soil map. But the soil survey that's now in digital form, it used to be in great big books, and now it's a spatial database, which is really awesome and useful. It is a very rich data source. So it has all sorts of parameters in it, such as drainage class or available water holding capacity or texture, as you see in this case, or soil depth. So that is a very rich data source that can be mind according to whatever the objective is of your study. So the critical component of this project is grower cooperation, and we need it for three reasons. First of all, I mentioned we are developing criteria to select those pilot orchards. So we have the technical piece of that, right? We can look at the data and we can filter out orchards that are high in ET. We're looking at canopy shading using NDVI. We're doing all these things, but at the end, we need to work with growers and the GSA to really prioritize what kinds of orchards do we want to have in this pilot study that will be representative of the subbasin and that will provide good information for developing a subbasin-wide program going forward for the long term. The second reason we need grower cooperation is that we need information. So all of that information that I just showed you, including consumptive use, doesn't mean anything unless we have yield data. And the reason is because we can find orchards that have high consumptive use, for example, but we don't know why that consumptive use is high. And so all these steps we're taking, including finding consumptive use, comparing it to yields and these other factors are to tease out what we can do in those orchards to minimize that non-beneficial ET. So that information that we're looking for from growers who will participate in this pilot includes not only yields, but irrigation management and scheduling methods. So there are growers who use soil-based irrigation scheduling methods, or plant-based, or weather-based, or ET-based. This information, when we get down to this pilot level, will be kept anonymous and summarized at that level because it's only going to be relevant to those each particular pilot orchard anyway. So the idea is to work with growers to look at the specific conditions and the specific scenario of these pilot orchards on an individual basis and develop strategies, using those kind of three things that we were talking about before, the grower information and experience on that orchard, what we know from literature and expertise, and then the data that we have developed through remote sensing and data development. So the third thing that we need grower cooperation for is to actually implement these strategies. We want to be implementing them in 2025 so that we can monitor the ET or the consumptive use at the same time and see if we can kind of move the needle on that non-beneficial ET throughout the 2025 growing season. So, I think that is the end of the technical part of it. We are engaging some local expertise, Luke Milleron, who is the Orchard Systems Advisor in Butte County. We're going to have him help us review these technical protocols. We have Alan Fulton working with us, who has many years of experience, of course, actually throughout California, but particularly in Northern California. And then we have a large list of people who work with us on a regular basis, just sort of giving us a gut check on our ET results so that we know that we're producing accurate results and that they're representative of the crops that we're working with. Okay, so I think that's it, and we have lots of time for questions, if there are any.
There is one question in the chat. If the person who typed that question, the question is wondering if growers enter this program allows them to draw their full allotted amount of water later in the season. Can you expand on that a little bit more?
Are you talking to me, Joel?
No, the person who entered the question. It's an iPhone. Well, I can. Oh, sorry, nothing more. Oh, okay. I'm not fully understanding your question, but I maybe can. First off, I don't think there's any allotted amount of water. There's no allotments. That when I think of an allotment, I think of the South Valley where an actual number is provided to a grower. You can't pump this more than this, or you can't consume more than this. So at this point, I don't think there's any allotments that I'm aware of anyway. Yeah, so therefore, that's the best I can. I don't know, Stephanie, do you have any thoughts on that question?
No, except to kind of build on what you said, which is that this isn't really focused on a particular amount of water per se. It's mostly helping. So the GSA wants, and rightly so, wants to look at basin-wide strategies to reduce demand, right? Because they can get a lot further doing that than, you know, one person doing a little bit over here and one person doing a little bit over there. So the idea of these pilot programs is to leverage this data that we have on a large landscape scale. And the pilots are really testing out some protocols, both technical and with growers, to see, well, hey, if we can figure out strategies to reduce this non-beneficial ET without reducing yield, then we can reduce water demand, whatever that is. It might be 5 to 10%. And we can also, you know, that's beneficial for growers, right? Because it might improve their bottom line in the end.
I think, Susan Schrader, you have a question. Your hand's up. I think you're on mute, Susan.
There we go. I have a couple of things. Okay, so these farmers are going to be incentivized, and is the incentivizing expected to cover what would normally be their yield for the year? Like, I don't know how much you make off of, the minimum is 20 acres, right? So, okay, I would make this much off of these almonds. So that's the incentive that I need in order for me to participate in this program. Is that what you expect?
Jeff, I'll let you talk about ERA's work, or Toby too.
So yeah, let Toby talk about the incentives. So there are incentives for the Extend Orchard Replacement Program for that purpose.
Right. There's also... Go ahead.
And so there's no monetary incentives for the precision irrigation program because of the way that grant, you know, there's rules about grants, but Toby can talk about the incentives for the Extended Orchard Replacement Program.
Oh, okay. And before we talk to Toby, I have a question for Stephanie. You at one time said that this does not necessarily recharge the groundwater. Did I understand that you said that, or did I misunderstand?
Oh, sorry. I'll explain that again. It's a little bit of a tricky thing. So when irrigation is applied, right, there's not all of it goes towards the plant because no biological system is 100% efficient. So 50 years ago, when there was less research available and less of everything, I guess, there was a lot of, there were more inefficient irrigation systems, right? And so they might have been 60 or 70% efficient. And that meant that the water that was not used by the crop went down into the soil, and depending on the subsurface geology, could recharge the groundwater. When statewide over the years, agriculture has switched to low volume or much more efficient irrigation systems, right? And so if they're more efficient, well, that's good for the crop and good for farmers and good in general, and especially in where there's a lot of surface water usage, because if an irrigation system is 80% efficient, and this is all about, how it's distributed throughout the field and all that kind of thing, then more water is going to the plant, but less water is going to recharge the groundwater, right? So there are many instances where the switch from these less efficient irrigation systems, such as flood irrigation, to the very efficient irrigation systems, such as drip, has resulted in less recharge of groundwater. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. This project is really not about irrigation efficiency, though. It's more about tackling, because we've gone a long way with irrigation efficiency, right?
Yes.
The growers in the Vina Subbasin and most everywhere else irrigate as efficiently as they can because it's in their best interest to do that. This is about really tackling that non-beneficial ET because that is what's going to reduce demand.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
You guys have some awesome data. Just listening to all the things you have and you can overlay them. I think that's very interesting. Okay, and then Tovey is going to address the issue about incentivizing.
Yes. Hi, Susan. I think there's the program that we use as kind of a reference point on this is an existing program, a DWR program called Land Flex. And in that program, they pay farmers to permanently fallow land. And most of that money, well, as far as I can tell, all of that money so far has been spent in the Central Valley, so south of Sacramento. But they pay farmers to pull land out of production permanently. And there's an economic analysis that goes into that. And the number that they have used, as far as I know, is around $2,700 per acre. And that's made up of different things. That's a permanent fallowing program. Ours is not a permanent fallowing program. Ours is just a temporary removal. So we're anticipating that the incentive will be much lower, right?
Like
Much lower, right? So that's
half, even.
or more. But let me get into two additional
Okay.
things. The first is the firm, I mean, we're really lucky. LandIQ is the statewide recognized expert at the spatial kind of analysis level on what's happening. We're also working with an economics firm that's done most of the economic analyses for the state and others on these types of issues, essentially in the Central Valley, and they're working on our project too. So they're in the middle of an economic analysis right now that's going to tell us what that range of incentive should be. And that's impacted by a number of different things. How good the market is at the time, access to, I mean, there's a whole bunch of factors that go into that. So that's the second thing. We don't have firm numbers yet. I can say we're also still kind of thinking through, and you'll see if you look at the guidelines, right now we've kind of laid out a process for how we're going to select applicants, but we're also still thinking about how we're going to accept applications. In the Central Valley, there are some programs down there that essentially do a sealed bid. So they say, look, we're going to provide some incentive dollars to remove acreage from production, and you tell us what you'll take to pull your acreage out of production. And so in that case, we don't put out a number, we ask for numbers. And there was one instance where the numbers were so high down there that they didn't end up allocating any of the funds. And but then they kind of reoriented, and then the numbers came in differently, and then they allocated the funds, right?
Oh, it's a negotiation in a sense.
Yeah, so
And
I
this money comes from the state, right?
that's right. That's right. So we've got about $1.25 million, about 1.25 million to allocate. And we want to see if we can't get around 2,000 to 3,000 acres out of production as part of this program. Right. So that's our goal. And we're still tinkering with how we're going to accept applications. Are we going to say, here's the number, who wants to apply? Or are we going to say, come back to us with a sealed bid, and then we'll use that as one of the criteria that we use to select applicants.
And then, eventually, like, what if the money runs out? Then you just hope that they'll do it anyway because it's proven to be so effective at, taking care of our water shortages.
Well, I think that, what we're hoping is, this is part of this one grant. So when that 1.25 runs out, there isn't backup funding to keep this program going in the future. But it's kind of like SWEEP, in that that's a different program that's run through the California Department of Food and Ag. It's a statewide efficiency program for growers. That program has gotten allocations of funding from the state for the past 10, 12, 14 years. We're hoping that the Land Flex program in the Central Valley has been successful, and we're hoping to pioneer a temporary kind of rotational fallowing program up here that's also successful and can attract future funds. And then I'll just kind of find, add that, Prop 4, it looks like Prop 4 is going to pass in California, and that will provide some addition. There's money earmarked in that, for these types of programs.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yep.
And also, Susan, I think, historically, I grew up in that area and I know it well. Historically, growers would take out an orchard and try to get back in as fast as they could, put in another orchard. And lately, growers now do begin to realize the value of resting that ground for a while. I know my own brother does do that for a couple of years. He prefers not to go back in. He puts, a dry season sedan grass or something like that to kind of just rest that soil, do some biological control and nematodes or things like that. So there's those types of benefits that also kind of come with this program of, hey, if you do leave your orchard out a year, there's these benefits that come with it that, yeah, you're losing a year of production, but in the long run, resting that ground and doing some other things can also be beneficial. So that's part of this outreach and communication with growers and how they've changed over the years as well. So there's non-monetary benefits to do it as well. Emily, I think you have a question, Kyle Trout.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the presentation. I was just curious if someone could talk a little bit about why you selected like the mature orchards for the precision irrigation program. Like, is it assumed or is there data that's kind of showing that they're like those have more of the non-beneficial evapotranspiration that might be reducing demand or versus like a younger orchard or an older orchard. So can someone just speak to the selection of that particular age crop or age class?
Yeah, so those ages represent, sorry, can you still hear me okay? I'm getting a bit of an echo. Is that okay? Okay. Those age ranges for each crops, you notice they're a bit different for almonds and walnuts, represent sort of the mature, kind of the range of peak mature production. So we selected those for two reasons. Number one, that age range is the highest, represents the highest consumptive use, right? So very young orchards are not going to use as much water. And if orchards are left to be very old, they won't use as much water either because they're producing less. So that's the first reason. The second reason is that because we want to be able to compare apples to apples or walnuts to walnuts in this case. So we want to be able to compare similarly producing orchards to one another. Because if we try to compare old to young, for example, the consumptive use, the yields, nothing would be the same. So we're trying to kind of get a range of orchards that produce similarly so that they can be compared the most consistently.
Okay, yeah, that helps. But then also like the solutions that you might apply to reducing that consumption of non-beneficial evaporative transpiration, would that apply to essentially all the orchards going forward?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, if you're talking about strategies, let's say you're talking about, how, like Joel was mentioning about how you irrigate and irrigating more or less frequently or for different, with different water duties, or maybe some of those strategies involve orchard floor management, or maybe some of those strategies even might involve nitrogen. How you apply nitrogen, because that is really impactful on vegetative growth versus fruitful growth. So any of those could be applied to orchard production in general. It doesn't necessarily just apply to that specific age range.
Okay, thank you.
I have another question.
Sure.
Okay, so this is going to take a while because you have to take applications and everything, but once it gets going and you have people out in the field doing measurements and whatever else they need to do, is there a mechanism by which we can follow sort of progress and check in and see what you guys are looking at, or in the interest of transparency? Has that been talked about?
Joel, do you want to talk about the ET stations?
Yeah. So what we are beginning right now is determining the evapotranspiration of every block everywhere. Now,
Wow.
every field everywhere in the finest subbasin. The concept here is recognizing, and I mentioned it earlier, small trees with smaller canopies evapotranspire less than older trees with larger canopies. So that's known. But when you start to kind of look at things statistically, if you group those smaller orchards, because we know the age of those orchards, and if you group the larger orchards, and then you kind of run some summary statistics over
Statistics over
time.
time.
Somebody should. There we go. The objective is to see a reduction in consumption of water across the whole Vina subbasin, and that would we want to see the reduction in the reduction in the demand. That's the whole concept here. Both these approaches, demand reduct our demand reduction strategies. It should stand to reason that if we just let's just say for assume for example that the whole subbasin is all almonds. It's not, but let's just for the sake of discussion say that. And every 20 at the 25th year, every grower took out their orchard and 25 years. And if we had that extend orchard replacement program in effect and every grower left it out for an extra year, so basically 2 years, we should see a 1/25th reduction in demand or evapotranspiration over the entire subbasin. It's not that clean, of course, Susan, but that's the concept here, and that's on an extend orchard replacement program. In addition to that, with the precision irrigation program, if we are successful in the grower communications and working with the grower community to reduce non-beneficial ET, that should also show across the subbasin a reduction in the loss of water through evapotranspiration or demand. So the beautiful thing about doing this in a spatial sense is we can compare where we are today and then moving forward in time, we'll be knowing that consumption as we go forward. And that, if you can reduce that, that's the most significant loss of the water balance. You got water in, water out. That's the water out. We want to reduce the water out. So we're assuming the water in stays fairly constant.
So you're going to, so how long will this program will go on for a year, right? Like a whole, you know, as what, as far as all your measurements and stuff, it'll be a year. So are you going to have like quarterly meetings like this, where you can, or just one at the end or halfway through, where you like say, well, this is what we've been doing and this is what it looks like, or?
Oh yeah, that sounds like a outreach and communication question.
Hey, thank you. Susan, tell me your question again. I was sitting here responding to the chat on something.
Oh, just that, you know, how is there any, have you guys set up a mechanism by which we can sort of see how things are going? You know, like quarterly meetings, or I don't know, whatever.
Well,
or is it going to be just, we're doing it and then at the end we'll announce our results?
All right. I think that's a good question. I mean, next year we'll select applicant. Let's talk specifically about the Extend Orchard program. We'll know by the end of February next year who's in that program, and how many acres that is, and what we anticipate the reduction in groundwater use will be. So we'll know that, and then as part of the program, growers will be required to. And AGBC will be participating in essentially annual checkups on that, which I'm sure will turn into something, you know, some kind of a report, at least for the Vina GSA, that will go back as part of that process, right, to review how many growers are complying with their management plan, that, you know, et cetera, that kind of stuff. So I think there's a natural kind of check-in with the Vina GSA on an annual basis. But I haven't gone any further to kind of talk through with the GSA. Should we do an additional, you know, the land's going to be fallow. It's not going to have trees on it. And then we're going to wait till the end of the year to get a report or to generate a report that analyzes compliance, essentially. And then we'll send that to the GSA. And I suppose we could do something separate if we needed to. But I think, you know, that information definitely will be communicated with the GSA.
Okay.
And if you feel strongly,
we'll talk to Cammy.
Yeah, Cammy, I think Cammy's going to respond to that. Her hand's up.
Oh, I didn't see that. Okay.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, and Toby, you started to touch on it, is that at least for this part of the grant process and this project, there are deliverables that we have to report out as part of the grant. And so we'll submit that information. So as, you know, as the whole project moves forward, there are things that have to be submitted as part of grants and reimbursements and kind of the status report updates. And I think that information we could easily, I think, Dylan can correct me if I'm wrong, we could do periodic webinars as just a summary update of the status of the projects, which we've been giving throughout over the last couple of months of things that are happening. And we could do that as well, just as part of the reporting requirements. Is that what you're asking, Susan?
Yeah,
like over the course of the next year, how are we going to know? Are we just going to get to the end and say, oh, you know, 2,000 acres was taken out, and we could summarize it that way. But I think periodic updates as part of over the course of the next year could easily be incorporated into the process.
Yeah, that's what I was asking about. And I'm glad that you're, you know,
Yeah,
Susan, like that's fine for you. Yeah,
Susan, I think part of one of the reasons that we do these public engagement meetings, as well as like do questions and make them interactive, is because that's the kind of feedback we're looking for. We might not have, and why we like to get input, because now that's something we can put on our list of something that we would want to consider. So thank you for that comment. And we'll look into see what that could look like.
Okay, well, yeah, it seems like you guys have been, you know, we have one today, we have one next week. So it looks like you guys have been, you know, getting the word out to the public. So that's good.
Thank you. We appreciate that. You saying that, Susan.
Any other questions from folks?
Was there something in the chat, Toby, you were answering to, or do you think that you were able to answer that with your comment?
Oh, I just added a little bit for Patricia, but I think some of the questions she asked, I think are, we've answered in the GRE guidelines. So my suggestion was take a quick look at the guidelines. If there's still additional questions, then either email me directly, or, you know, and if you don't feel like that's a good enough email, then submit questions on as part of the.
Yeah. Can you hear me or?
Yeah, sure. Go for it.
Okay. Yeah. My questions are about, if you're planning to fallow land, and I mean, I think Christina and Cammy were with me last night. We saw this amazing machinery that can really read the landscape and find out where filtration for groundwater would be most likely. And what we can do with technology and metadata on this is amazing. The area most likely, instead of doing the whole Butte County area. And then what about those orchards that have previously had pesticides on them to keep the orchards up? Like, is that why you're accounting? I just have a lot of questions about the preliminary, what you proposed in the grant, what the grant was designed for, if it was for growers specifically, and demand reduction strategies, how you came up with these two strategies, what kind of feedback you got. And I just have questions about, yeah, how this process is going to go, like from implementation, from consideration to implementation. Is there some place that we can see this, like, spelled out, timelines, metrics, all of that?
Well, I'll answer that. I'll answer the part about your part about pesticides and such. This is a water quantity program, not a water quality program. So it doesn't address, an unintended address, water quality. So that, I think, gets at part of your, I'm reading your chat question right now. So there will be no soil testing for that type of a component. So this is about water quantity. And Tovey, I may kick to you, you know, the grant, receive the outline, the guidelines of the grant, the objectives of the grant, kind of those overarching pieces that you can speak to better than I can.
Well, yeah, that's why I put the grant guidelines, because I think it does address public process. It addresses how we're going to, what the criteria we're going to use for selection, how the incentives are structured, how we hope to select based on the criteria that's laid out. You know, once, as part of the application period or process, people are going to give us not only information on a field or that series of parcels, but they're also going to give us information on a management plan. That management plan, you can, in the scoring criteria that you can see in the GRE guidelines, you know, we give extra weight to applications that include cover crops or other types of ongoing management activities, behavior, if you will. So then there's some pretty detailed scoring criteria that that value how much information we're getting on, you know, the basic information on the field, what type of management plan information we're getting, whether or not folks are using cover crops. And then there's some sub-basin priorities that are also incentivized. Obviously, I forgot that water savings, 1 year or 2 years. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of points associated with those two. But then the sub-basin priorities, the two that we've identified that are, you know, this is all consistent with the GSP. So that parcel's proximity to domestic wells that have gone dry and or groundwater dependent ecosystems, you get more or less points based on proximity. So I think there's a lot. Okay, I see your response here. I think there's a lot of detail there. Take a look at that, and then if you have more specific, then reach out to me directly, or, you know, feed into. We've gotten a couple comments so far, and I think the comments that we've gotten are good ones. So I do anticipate that we'll be updating the grant guidelines based on comments that we get. So we're open to that as well.
Great. That's what I was getting to, was multi-purpose benefits. And if you're looking at that, and so I'm glad to hear you are. Thank you.
You should feel free to reach out to myself or Stephanie at LandIQ anytime you want. No problem. We can answer any questions on the technical side for you.
Hey, Joel, you talked a little bit about allotments earlier, and Pam has asked a question about that. Is there anything more that you can say on allotments? I mean, I think there's a question about, aren't allotments part of this problem? But I don't think that totally reflects the Vinus subbasin and what's happening in the Vinus subbasin. I mean, it's groundwater dependent. There aren't allotments in this case.
Well, my experience in the South Valley is that when you get into a situation that is kind of much more dire than we're experiencing in the Vinus subbasin, allotments are usually tools that are used to cap basically what growers can pump or consume. I don't think we have that issue here in the Vinus subbasin, and allotments are kind of your last ditch effort to say, okay, we can only consume, or we can only apply this much water, and therefore we're going to divvy it up across the landscape, and that's it. And we have no other way to reach sustainability. We have conserved as much as we conserved. We've done the extended orchard replacement programs, if there was one down there. Our growers are limited, reduced non-beneficial ET as much as we possibly can. Now we got to cap growers. Allotments are kind of a drastic measure that has to be done in certain places. I'm not certain that that's the case in the Vinus subbasin based on our experience elsewhere. So I think that could be something in the future if we can't achieve what we're wanting to try to achieve here with demand reduction strategies. I'm optimistic we can do it with demand reduction strategies and not put allotments on growers, but not saying that's out of the question either. Any other questions from folks? I don't see any more in the chat either. So again, I'm happy to answer anybody's questions offline, or you'd give us a call. Stephanie is too. You can find our contact information on our website if you want to reach out to us, landiq.com. Tovey, I'm going to volunteer you to answer anybody's questions as well. And thanks for the participation today. Appreciate it a bunch.
Thanks for the presentation. Very informative.
Bet.
I'm impressed with all your data. Okay.
Well, we're trying to put it to you, so let's do that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.